Linux 7.2 dropped this week, and while kernel releases don't always generate massive HN engagement, this one got 259 upvotes and 105 comments. The Egalia post covering the release is worth noting. Egalia has been doing significant upstream kernel work, particularly around graphics and display drivers, and their involvement in summarizing the 7.2 changes signals where the community energy is flowing.
What's notable about Linux 7.2 from a business perspective is the continued maturation of the kernel's support for heterogeneous compute environments. The AI hardware boom has created a situation where the kernel needs to handle a much wider variety of accelerator architectures, GPUs from multiple vendors, custom ASIC designs, memory configurations that don't map cleanly onto traditional CPU-centric models. Each major kernel release is partially a response to that expanding hardware landscape.
The piece about rebuilding the Linux Micro VM stack on Apple Silicon is directly adjacent to that. The Encore dev team documented their experience getting Firecracker, the Micro VM hypervisor that AWS developed and open-sourced, running on Apple Silicon Macs. Firecracker is designed for ultra-lightweight virtualization, the kind that runs AWS Lambda functions with sub-millisecond startup times. Getting it to work natively on ARM-based Macs is a non-trivial engineering project.
The practical value is significant. Developers who run Apple Silicon machines and want to test against Linux Micro VM environments previously had to use a heavier virtualization layer or spin up remote instances. A native Firecracker stack on Apple Silicon means faster local iteration for teams building serverless or container-based infrastructure.
The HN comments on that piece were enthusiastic, 42 comments, mostly from people who have hit exactly that pain point. There were also some interesting technical discussions about the differences between x86 and ARM virtualization at the hypervisor level, and what the Encore team had to work around specifically, because of how Apple Silicon handles memory and I/O.
The Ruby hash optimization piece is a different kind of system story, micro-level performance engineering rather than infrastructure architecture. Byroot, Gene Bousier, who's a core Ruby committer, documented the work of speeding up small Ruby hashes, which are one of the most commonly created and destroyed objects in typical Ruby applications.
The interesting thing about this kind of work is that it compounds. Shaving a few nanoseconds off hash creation doesn't sound dramatic, but when you're running a Rails application that creates millions of hash objects per second across a cluster, the cumulative effect on memory allocation pressure and garbage collection frequency is measurable. The blog post walks through the profiling methodology and the data structure changes, which is the kind of transparent, evidence-based optimization write-up that the HN community consistently rewards.
The superconducting magnet paper is the most esoteric item in today's lineup, a technical paper on making a 6 Tesla class high temperature superconducting dipole magnet at 4.2 Kelvin, but it's worth flagging because of where it sits in the broader landscape. High temperature superconducting magnets at this field strength are directly relevant to both fusion energy research and next generation particle accelerator design. The fact that this surfaced on HN with 42 upvotes suggests there's a meaningful overlap between the HN audience and people tracking the hardware prerequisites for long-term energy breakthroughs.
And Micron's announcement of a $10 billion research hub in Boise connects to all of this. Memory and storage technology is the unsexy but foundational layer that everything else runs on: AI training, cloud infrastructure, edge compute. Micron positioning this as a long horizon innovation hub, rather than a manufacturing expansion, is a statement about where they see competitive advantage. Not just in current DRAM and NAND production, but in the memory architectures that AI workloads will require 5 to 10 years out.
Boise is also a geopolitically interesting choice. Domestic semiconductor investment has been a policy priority since the CHIPS Act, and a $10 billion commitment in Idaho is exactly the kind of announcement that generates bipartisan political support. Micron gets the optics of reshoring. The federal and state governments get the jobs and the infrastructure. The research agenda benefits from proximity to existing Micron manufacturing in the same region.
The Japan operating system story is the historical thread that ties a lot of this together. XDA developers wrote about Japan's Tron project, an initiative in the 1980s to build a Japanese operating system that could become a global standard. The project was technically serious, had strong academic and industrial backing, and was making real progress. Then the US government, under trade pressure framing, essentially pushed Japan to abandon it as part of broader trade negotiations.
The Tron story is one of those historical episodes that doesn't get nearly enough attention in mainstream technology writing. The operating system layer is the ultimate platform. Whoever controls it shapes what applications can exist and what hardware configurations are supported. Japan's attempt to own that layer in the 1980s, at a moment when Japanese electronics manufacturing was genuinely competitive with or ahead of American alternatives, was a direct threat to U.S. platform dominance.
The U.S. Trade Representative's office listed Tron as a trade barrier in 1989 under Section 301, the same legal mechanism used for tariff disputes. The argument was that Japanese government support for Tron in school procurement was unfair competition. Japan backed down. Tron survived in embedded systems. It actually still runs in a remarkable number of Japanese industrial devices and consumer electronics. But it never became the global OS standard it might have been.
The parallel to current AI and semiconductor geopolitics is impossible to miss. The same question of whether a country can build and sustain a technology platform that becomes infrastructure for others is playing out right now with Chinese AI models, with EU efforts to fund European cloud alternatives, and with US export controls on chips. The mechanisms are different, but the strategic logic is identical.